Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
Hello and welcome to MotorWeek podcast number 72. And we're coming to you from Studio C here at MotorWeek Central. And I'd like to welcome the other participants of today's podcast, our writer and two-wheeling reporter, Brian Robinson.
Hello, John.
And our over-the-edge reporter, Stephen Chepnick.
Hey.
And our associate producer and the chief cook and bottle washer on our road test, Ben Davis.
Hello.
Okay, we'll have a lightning round and we'll dip into our MotorWeek mailbag. But first, you could say whatever's old is new again. And I'm talking about the three vehicles we're going to talk about. Let's start off with a legendary name from Dodge, and it wasn't necessarily a legendary name with a good reputation, but the Dodge Dart is back. And for those that may remember the original Dart, they may be questioning the use of this name. But let's see what everybody thinks about the new one.
Well, Brian? I disagree already. I was pumped to see the Dart name coming back.
Yeah. I am too, but I do remember I had a girlfriend that had one, and it was a lot of trouble.
Wow, there's probably some better stories there. Keep going.
Long time ago. So the Dart name is back. It's back on an Alfa Romeo-based new compact. We've all had a chance to drive it. In the testing situation, how did it do, Ben?
It's an impressive car, no doubt. I mean, it's zippy, nimble, accelerates good, it's quiet. The materials that go into making it and the design inside are exactly what American car markets need to compete against Honda and Hyundai, I believe. I mean, it's a real deal competitor. There was a lot of back and forth on this one before they just threw it out there.
It makes me nervous because it is so nice. I'm like, what am I missing? Because either this thing's just going to fall apart.
Well, the warranty is 5-year, 100,000 mile, too.
It is so comfortable. Even the back seats were extremely comfortable.
You have to be impressed. Mm-hmm. Even though they started with a good chassis, the Alfa Romeo Giulietta, they lengthened it. I mean, the chassis is quite different. The powertrains seem remarkably spirited, even the 1.4 turbo out of the 500. The material quality, as you mentioned, was excellent. They put their largest nav screen in it. The styling is good. It still has some Dodge family familiarity, but it's basically looks fresh. The roof line is straight off of an Audi A4 or A6. I mean, we've been saying for a long time it's one of the cars that make buying from a Detroit manufacturer for the average family looking for a sedan a viable option again. Like you, except for maybe nitpicking a few things like when you didn't like some of the grains in the material or how they punched the holes for the speaker.
That's true. Yeah, that does sound like us.
You know, there wasn't anything much to complain about this car.
Yeah, I mean, my dad had a 69 Dodge Dart, and I remember growing up with that car. This does not look anything like it.
No, and the name is it,
yeah,
I think.
I mean, but it's fun to drive. It looks great. The nav screen you mentioned, and it's – you know, we've started to see the nav screen that Chrysler's been doing, and it's really, really good. I mean, there's so many it's touch, so it is minor kind of thing where you know you do get your fingerprints on there, but everything is just right there. The screen is great.
I'll throw out one caveat that as with an engineering background, it does bother me a little bit. The two of the engines have what they call this multi-air head, and it's a very sophisticated variable valve timing head that uses pneumatics and springs and rubber bladders and all sorts of things.
Italian voodoo.
Well, it bothers me a little because it's so complex, and if they have problems down the line, you know, that's going to be a real bad mark because you're going to see this technology in a lot of Chrysler products. But on the other hand, as you pointed out, there's a 100,000-mile warranty on the powertrain.
It's interesting you say that because the same motor in the Fiat with the capability of boosting cranking the boost up a little bit only has 50,000-mile warranty.
Interesting. So they recognize going in that they better make sure they backed it well.
Yeah, there's no sport button in the 1.4 Dart.
And we all know that American families, as a general rule, do not take very good care of their cars as far as routine maintenance. So, but that was the only thing that I came away from.
It starts at 16 grand, and they got a whole wide range of models which they all kind of have their own style too.
Yeah,
some of the cool features you can't get on the cheaper ones, which is a little disappointing. But
that's true. We've had a pretty highline one in here, and you could tell it kind of the look of it catered to an older audience. But the rally model and such are a lot cooler looking, honestly. And youth tuners are going to grab them and throw trick exhaust on them, and they're just going to be awesome.
I hope so. I wish them luck. Great, very impressive car. Turning to another old name that's gotten not its first redo, but I'd have to say probably its most stylistically major change is the new Ford Escape compact crossover. It's almost getting too big to call a compact. How did it go over with you guys?
Yeah, I spent most of the time in that. The big thing with the Escape, no more V6, three different four-cylinder engines, carryover 2.5 that they had. And then the 2-liter EcoBoost from the Edge and Explorer and Flex and Taurus and everywhere else in the Ford lineup. And then a new 1.6-liter EcoBoost.
Which actually replaces their hybrid, I guess, as far as
better,
the fuel
yeah,
zipper.
Yeah, gets better mileage, highway mileage. All three engines get over 30 miles per gallon highway. It is bigger than it was before. Just a lot more stylish. A lot of people, especially in the media, really kind of – gave the Escape a bad rap, but it's always been one of the best selling in the segment.
Yes, it has.
And last year they actually had their best sales years ever. So, you know, obviously it was a time for a redo, but they didn't really, you know, need to do one sales wise. But for a compact, it's really capable, plenty roomy. If you get the 2-liter EcoBoost, you can tow up to 3,500 pounds, which I'm not sure anything else in the compact segment does that. There might be one or two others, but not most.
That's what the JX tows.
Yeah, it was a much bigger vehicle. I was very impressed with the quantum leap they did on interior materials. Actually, that was the one thing I used to fault the old Escape for, is that, yeah, some of the stuff was pretty thin and very bargain basement looking. This is anything but. It's much quieter. I thought routinely being able to take it out and get into the high 20s really sets it apart from most any other crossover out there. I have to mention the CX-5 from Mazda, which, depending on who you believe, these two vehicles sort of started off life something similar when Mazda was part of Ford. Apparently, that didn't carry through to production, but the Mazda CX-5, which we liked so much we gave it one of our Driver's Choice Awards, felt very pokey compared, I thought, to the Escape.
Powertrain. Yeah.
So very similar vehicles, but a little bit different execution, both high quality. But I like the Escape. I thought it looks well-timed, coming out just at the time when everybody wants more miles per gallon.
Yeah, it can get very pricey, though. I mean, it starts reasonable, but step up to, like, titanium trim, which comes with a hands-free lift gate, which we've talked
wiggle
about
your
before.
Foot underneath.
Yeah, you just kind of put your foot under the bumper and the lift gate magically opens. But that, you know, you can be mid 30s with this thing, which
you can get
a lot of midsize, you know, start under that. Well,
and that's the interesting thing, because this year on American Idol, that was the car that they were promoting. So, you know, they're promoting a $30,000 vehicle to teens, which, you know, I don't know who's, you know, if the parents are buying
it. Yeah, the parents are buying
that, only teens watch American Idol.
I don't know. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, the 18 to 34, you know, but I mean, who's voting? You know, it's teen girls who are voting.
Much as you come in every week and
I watch Idol. You know, I mean, I'm the biggest Idol person.
Yeah, but
you know.
You're just at the upper end of that.
But they had their own show even, didn't they? The Escape TV show,
right? Yeah, they had the I mean, they're promoting everything. It's like Escape Across America. It was on NBC. This is a Fox. I mean, Ford is really pumping this car up.
Well, it's
an
important vehicle for them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's it may be Focus based, but you know, it's one of many vehicles that are going to be getting off that Focus platform.
I mean, I like the CR-V a lot, which is obviously its main competitor. Those two always go kind of 1-2. For best selling in the segment.
And we have a CR-V in here, and it's very impressive.
It blows the CR-V away. I mean, it's not just the new CR-V is. I mean, it really does.
Let's move on now to an unusual vehicle, and it is kind of new, and at least its execution. This is the Scion IQ. However, it's based on an older, more familiar vehicle, which is the Toyota Versa. The IQ is a small car, smaller than the Versa. It has an unusual seating arrangement so that you can actually get supposedly three full-size adults in it and one child. It's sort of like a smart car, but with a back seat and a little more innovation. I sort of looked down my nose at it before I had a chance to drive it, but once I drove it, I was pretty impressed that they had done exactly what they wanted to do, which was a quirky package that would appeal, I would think, to non-traditional Toyota buyers, people that might buy Scions. What do you think?
I really liked it.
Why?
I think, you know, you look at it, and I think your first, you know, first take is, whoa, it's small. It is small. I'm not, you know, you get in, it's small. You look next, you know, there's no trunk. You fold the seats down. There's a nice, you know, size trunk.
Which you can't do in a Smart.
Correct. But, you drive it around and it's really fun to drive.
It has a ridiculously small turning diameter.
Oh, you turn the wheel, you're around.
Yeah.
I thought the interface with, the video screen was pretty good. You know, like we were talking about the Dart as well, where, you know, this for a little car like that, it has a very nice video system in it.
Good city car all around.
I definitely say. I mean, you can park it anywhere. I think more so than really, you don't look as, I don't know, dumb and smart. I think you look like you're actually getting out of a real car compared to a Smart.
You can't put something in the back seat.
But once you're in the IQ, unlike the Smart, it drives big. It doesn't feel like a small
car. Point.
And it's a true 3+1. I mean, one of our newest employees, Greg, he's 6'2". He swallowed right up in the rear seat. It was amazing. Plenty of headroom,
I'd like to have seen that.
Well, tune into Motor Week.
Now, I did see when they were crawling around on the inside of the car, my first impression was that I wasn't going to be comfortable with the fact that the passenger actually sits a little ahead of the driver. But once I had somebody in the passenger seat, it really didn't bother me at all.
And they only really have to do that if there's somebody in the back.
Yeah.
So. Otherwise, they can even up with you and just have cavernous leg room.
Now, you give up a couple things. It doesn't have a front glove box.
Right.
And so there's some minor things that I think you're missing. But
As far as driving, I can agree. It didn't feel that small at all. I mean, out on the highway or whatever, near trucks and stuff, it felt like a real car.
It didn't even feel that narrow with two adults in the front, really.
The Chuppy said, there's no real trunk. There's a little storage bin under the floor. You could fit a couple pair of socks in, maybe, or something like that.
But he also said you can't put the seats down. So you've got more versatility than, say, a Smart. I mean, this is not it's not an option for somebody that wants a compact. But.
Right. And, you can choose whether you want to haul people or cargo in the rear seat. The best fuel economy of any non-hybrid car at 36 city, 37 highway.
Don't you just love the way he's got all those numbers right at his fingertips?
I just wrote the route down. I sent it to you today. So, we averaged 37.1 driving it around and not, it's a 1.4 liter that is pretty slow. So you pretty much always have your foot to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing sounds like vuvuzelas under the hood.
But, sounds like what?
But we still average 37 miles a gallon.
For fuel economy conscious folks that don't have a lot of space, and it's not that expensive.
And some people would say, like I had a couple people say, you can get 50 miles a gallon in a Prius and have a ton more room. And that's not really the point of the car. I mean, it's small for the sake of being small. It's it's a city car that you can park anywhere and get around in easily. And, it doesn't get the greatest fuel economy compared to hybrids,
but it's not as expensive either.
Correct. Starts at 16, I think, 16,000.
And there's only one model.
They've sold very well in Asia and in Europe, where it goes under the Toyota banner. And I think it was just a matter of gas getting high enough here or volatile enough to where that people care about it. I mean, right now, fuel economy is the number one thing for people buying a car. And when you combine that with migration of people back to the cities, the IQ looks perfectly timed.
Ching.
Okay. With that said, we're going to move on now to our lightning round, where our Motor Week panelists have the opportunity to share their opinions on topics making headlines. And this is bears right to what we've just been talking about.
This is a long one. I'm going to go grab a cup of coffee while you're reading this.
We just talked about the Scion IQ, and recent surveys show that young people, which is what the IQ is aimed at, are waiting much longer to get their driver's license. They are keeping in touch with friends via social media instead of seeing them face to face. So you wonder what impacts this is going to have on, for instance, Scion, Toyota's youth-oriented brand. Are they at a crossroads? Are they going to be able to appeal to this new breed of drivers? Reportedly, the car that put Scion on the map, the XB, is going to be discontinued. It was one of our favorites back in 2008. So what's going on with teens? How is it going to affect Scion as they get a little bit older? And is Scion going to become just another car company?
Well, you can already tell where they're thinking with the new FRS coming out. It's a lot sportier, rear-wheel drive, sports car. So,
like a normal car?
Well, I think all the Scion cars are normal. I mean, as much as they brand them as being youth-oriented, you know, they're still a normal car.
But they've been kind of quirky-looking up till now.
Yeah, and the Scion has a little bit of that still, but it's, you know, it's a rear-wheel drive sports car, something they've never done. So, obviously, they're expanding their market.
I happen to know this target crowd that we're talking about.
Sweet.
18-year-olds with no license. They have no jobs either, and all they do is play Xbox. I know a whole bunch of them. So
why get a driver's license when you can't afford to buy a car? I'm not laughing at them. I think it's very sad.
The best thing I could tell Scion is to advertise on the back of an unemployment check
envelope. Oh, my goodness. Well, it is true, you know, what you're basing at. And when you talk about a lot of the cars that are aimed at youth in general, they're not necessarily inexpensive. And you do wonder.
Well, when we're talking about youth, we're not talking about 16-year-olds.
No, we're talking about 20-somethings.
Under 30s.
Right.
And there's plenty of people under 30 that have a driver's license and can afford a $16,000 car. I mean,
there's a lot of recent graduates that can't get a job either.
Yeah, but I think the age we're talking about here is a lot of 18-year-olds with no license because they took it out of the school systems anyway here in Maryland. You can't do driver's ed anymore, so you have to pay for it out of pocket.
They shouldn't have new cars anyway. You know, what's wrong with getting
That's a good point, too.
But if the parents are going to pay for it, who's going to chuck in the money? But I think a lot of teens, not all, I shouldn't say all, but a lot of teens are just looking to see, you know, they are going on Facebook and Twitter, but they're seeing what they can do in the car with their phones. So it doesn't matter, you know, they're still going to drive somewhere.
But before we run out of time, what about this whole thing about it is true that younger buyers, at least 18, 19s, they're not necessarily getting their driver's license as soon as, say, I did and probably most of you.
That's fine. Keep them off the
road.
And
we had you didn't necessarily have your own car. You drove your family's car or your father, your mother's car, whatever. Is this a trend that's going to be with us, or do you think this is just a phenomenon for now?
I think it's a money factor. If the 18, 19, 20-year-olds can afford a car.
Or if their parents
can afford a car, they're going to get the car that they want, whether it's a funky-looking IQ or Honda Civic.
How many around the table bought their first car or anybody?
I'm raising my hand for those of you out there.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so how about you?
I inherited two cars.
You inherited – all right, one inherited a car. My uncle helped me buy my first car. You two bought your own first car. So, I couldn't have bought
$500 cash.
You know, mine was an old Mustang that I had to rebuild, but I couldn't have afforded it on my own, and I think maybe that's what's going on too.
Well, I mean, I got a car as soon as the day I turned 16, just because I needed to, get to my job. You know, my mom got tired of taking me to work.
I had my driver's license the day I turned 16 too.
I mean, if kids, most kids don't even work in high school now, so there's really not that need. Like you say, they're keeping up with their friends on Facebook. You know, if they don't need to go to work, there's not an urgent need to have a car.
I couldn't get to my job without one either. Interesting. So changing times and probably just changing lifestyles.
Just go to work.
Go to work. Get a job. You need a car or something.
Do it for the rest of your life.
Moving on now to our Motor Week mailbag. Okay, Google, as you probably have seen stories on this, has a fleet of them, but do you think autonomous cars, in other words, cars that will drive themselves, will go mainstream sometime in the future? I should point out that just came across our desk in the last couple of days. Volvo has got a video out there on the internet showing cars driving electronically in a train. In other words, a number of cars back to front, keeping perfect formation, driving down the headlines. And I'll just start say that we've come a long, you know, we've been talking about cars that will drive themselves for longer than our show's been on the air. It used to be, though, that it took sensors along the road. Now all the stuff's just on board. So with that, are cars that drive themselves likely to become practical enough to become popular?
I hope so. I won't get cut off every day on the way to work anymore.
Well, that would be kind of interesting.
I think not until every car is like that. I think there's just, well, or a majority of cars. I don't see this being a mainstream kind of thing for a long time.
I hate to say never, but we have a thing in the U.S. called lawyers that I don't think would ever let this happen. I mean,
the first time an accident happens, that
company's going to go out of business. Someone's going to get rich.
Especially if it's somebody like Google that's got so much money to start with.
And then all these autonomous cars are going to start a life of their own and just hang out with each other. And they're unemployed,
and take over the world. And you know, then we can have Transformers again.
It's possible, you know, down the way that you might have some kind of situation like you've got all these special toll lanes in, on freeways like in California and some other states where you pay extra to get into the express lanes. You know, it's feasible that those lanes could become autonomous driving lanes so that you have to get into those before your car would be allowed by some big brother to switch into that mode or something. But I actually agree with you. I think the lawyers could put a kibosh on this pretty quick.
I mean, the cars already know every car that's around them, and some can react and to the other cars already. I mean, the technology is certainly there, but I hate to say never because who knows, but I don't know. I don't see it happening.
Mainstream, no, but maybe microbrew.
And, you know, the Army's investigating a lot of this, too, for Battlefield. Smart vehicles that will drive themselves. I missed the last comment you made.
Definitely not mainstream, but maybe microbrewed.
Microbrewed, okay. Well, that brings the end of our latest Motor Week podcast. I was trying to think of some clever comeback, but failed miserably. I want to give thanks, though, to our audio engineer, Jim Bigwood, who makes sure that even our faux pas come through loud and clear. Our podcast creator, Bob Mixter, and the one and only Michelle Parker, our producer, also known as the Lady with the Bell. Oh, that was a two-ringer. She must be really tired of us today. Thanks very much for joining us on our Motor Week podcast. Be sure to watch Motor Week on public television stations around the country and also on Velocity. Till next time, I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by RockAuto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at MotorWeek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.